past, that there is no way it could start holding and taking all these countries as part of its central core. This is historically. So, for example, Tibet was incorporated into the Han, into the Qing dynasty by an act or decision and contract in 1751 as a tributary state of China. This, there have been times when it has renounced that. During the Second World War, it broke this and then was invaded by Mao after the war. But at the beginning, it was one of the tributary states. And unless you understand that, you don't really understand why Chinese overseas expansion is going to be different. I now want to this is an expanding relative to an empire. An empire with a Puritan ethic. The Puritan ethic is a term that is used by sociologists, particularly Max Weber, the great German sociologist. And Max Weber's famous book on the Puritan ethic suggested that the roots and origins of Western capitalism came out of a particular way of living, which consisted of being very hardworking, saving a lot, living very simply, trying to make a profit from everything you did all the time, being very rational, calculating. And this package, which he calls Puritan, which means purity or living simply, was something which he thought was behind our Western capitalist success and economic growth. Now, when I describe it like that, you will see that this is a description that exactly fits China. Because China has been living, or central China has been living mainly in areas of agriculture, particularly rice agriculture, the Chinese are famous for being the hardest working people in the world, along with the Japanese. They work and work and work. Your children work. Work and work and work. Last night we had dinner with Professor Xu Jun's daughter, Sherry. And she came to the dinner with all her school books. And she couldn't talk to us because she was working all the time. And I asked her mother how much she worked. She's only 13. And she works until 12 o'clock at night and gets up at 6:30 the next morning. Now, this is just crazy. Bad for your health, bad for your eyes, bad for your mind. But anyway, this is the Chinese system. Work, 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 work. And also, the Chinese have been famous for their interest in making money, small bits of money, and for living simply. So the question then is, if you had all these features which Max Weber thought led into our capitalist, industrial, scientific world, why did you not move into that world? This is one of the big questions in Chinese history, looked at from the West. Why did China not have the first industrial, capitalist, scientific civilization? This question, because you have all the personality characteristics. You have a peaceful country, you have hardworking people. Why did you not lead into the first scientific and industrial revolution? This is particularly puzzling because if you looked at China 500 years ago, during the Song dynasty, China was by far the most advanced technological and proto, that is half scientific civilization on Earth. All the great inventions, more or less, that human beings had made, as you know, the early ones were made in China. So clocks, the Suzong clock, mechanical clocks, mechanical weaving of cloth, gunpowder, the compass, printing, porcelain, silk weaving, tea cultivation, complex irrigation systems, huge boats, and an extraordinary educational system. So that when the first Westerners, or some of the first Westerners, came to China, when Marco Polo, a great traveller, came from Venice, he was just amazed. The biggest city in the world, Suzhou, with all these wonderful inventions. So anyone visiting this planet 500 years ago would have said, well, China is going to be the future. It is going to be the scientific industrial center of the world. But it wasn't. Because some 500, 300 or 400 years after that, after Marco Polo, this huge country, vast, was defeated by my little island, 1/20th of the size, far away. We sent our boats and soldiers and attacked and twice defeated the Chinese emperor. So how had this been reversed? And that is one of the big questions. What China did was hit what a friend of mine called Mark Elvin, who's a professor, at Oxford and elsewhere, Mark Elvin called a high level, that's high up, equilibrium, that means a flattening trap. So what China did historically, you look at its technology and its wealth. Up to the Song, it is like that. Europe is down here. China then hits something, some sort of ceiling, and goes along like this. So if this is 1350, and this is 1850, 500 years, China gets bigger, it expands physically, its population expands, but its wealth and technology hardly changes. There are hardly any important Chinese technological changes after 1350. Europe, which had been far behind, goes like this. On, as you'll see, it isn't Europe that does that. It's actually England. As I'll show you, Europe does the same thing as China. It has hits a ceiling, a high level equilibrium trap. So this is one of the big puzzles. What happened to China that it leveled off and didn't proceed any further? And this was the puzzle that was faced by one of our greatest experts on China. He's known in the West as Joseph Needham. And I think in China he's probably Joseph Lee. Is that right? What was his Chinese name?
Li
Yue Se. Li Yue Se. Not such. You said it loudly.
Li Yue Se.
Okay. So, his puzzle was, why did China not continue? He wrote many, many volumes. He was at my university in Cambridge, and he wrote many volumes about this, but never solved the problem. And this is the question, why did China science not emerge first in China? One of his arguments was that it was related to your philosophical system, your way of thinking about the world. And this takes me on to a very, very great difference between your world and my world. The question is, does China have a religion? Now, I don't know, does one of these words mean religion?
Yes.
And what is the literal translation of that word? Is it religion or ancestor rights, or how would you translate it?
I don't think there's a direct relation between the characters.
Because what I've been told is that there is no word in Chinese, no single word, for what we mean by religion.
Religion. Mm-hmm.
Qian.
The second letter.
Yeah. What does that mean?
Religion. But it has more than one meaning.
In the West, in my country, in Europe, in America, we mean by religion, you have a God who made this world. Some people will be able, because of their lives, to go up to heaven when they die. Others will go down to hell forever. There is no rebirth. Religion tells you exactly how to behave, your ethical system, what is right and what is wrong. Your religion tells you how to communicate with God, the rituals you must do to communicate with God, the prayers you must say. And there is only one God. Now, if you take those four criteria, ritual, creator God, ethics, and beliefs about salvation, hell, or sin, the meaning of life, and you look at China, you don't have a religion. Confucianism has some sorts of rituals and it has some ethics, but it is not interested in God. Hardly interested at all. There is no single God or a spiritual world. Taoism has some rituals, but there is no ethical system or a creator God. The closest is Buddhism, which has some rituals, has a little bit of ethics, but there is no God. The Buddha came here to say there is no God. So none of your religions, and you have them all fighting, or at least alongside each other, are like our concept of religion. So throughout Chinese history, you have not had an area. In our lives, we have an area which we call religion. You don't have that in China. You could widen the meaning of religion. You can say that if you take all the different pieces, for example, reverence to your ancestors, or the power of certain places which are sacred and set apart and you have a special feeling when you go into a temple or whatever, or the sacredness of certain ancient texts, then you can say that there are feelings and some overlap with what we mean by religion. But it doesn't match at all well. It's quite different. So, although when Sarah and I go to Shangri-La or into a Buddhist Confucian temple, we feel this looks a bit like religion, it isn't at all the same meaning as what we mean when we go into one of our churches. And a great difference is that your religions are just there. They are not forced on you. They are not something that you either believe or you don't believe. And if you don't believe, you are going to go to hell and damnation. Your religions are just a way of being and existing. And as a result, in the West, if you believe in one part of our religion, for example, if you are a Catholic, you want to make other people, like Protestants, into your variety of religion. If you are a Christian, you want to make other people religion. So, as you know, in China, you have had many missionaries coming from the West who are trying to make you Chinese into Christians. Now, you haven't been sending missionaries to Europe. You have been sending the Confucian Institutes. But they are educational and not trying to make us Confucianists. And anyway, it wouldn't be a religion. In our civilization, it is quite possible that you hear a knock on the door and someone comes to the door and says, I am a Jehovah's Witness, or I am a Mormon, or I am some Christian and I want to make you like me. I don't think any of you ever have Confucianists or Taoists or Buddhists coming knocking on your door to say, please join the Buddhist church or the Taoist church or the... So it's totally different. We are proselytizing. Now, the way this links to what we call the Needham question, the puzzle of Needham, is that Joseph Needham suggested that in order for you to have a scientific revolution, you had in China very advanced technology, but science consists of trying to understand what is below the surface. Technology will tell you how to make a good cup or to make a good jersey, but it is not concerned with the laws, the fundamental laws of physics, chemistry, mathematics, biology. It is looking at the best ways of doing things, effective actions. Science is basically means reliable knowledge about the laws of nature, what lies behind this physical world, gravity, or the vacuum, or DNA, or electricity, the laws of electricity. Now, in order to get to those kinds of deeper law beneath the surface, you need a particular philosophical system, which was provided in the West by our religious system, because what basically our religious system said was that God had created our world. He'd done it in 7 days, and what he did, he was like someone who was making a clock. He made the clock, he set all the wheels in the clock, the laws of his universe, and then he started it going round and round and ticking and ticking. This is what God did. So he created a world where there are underlying laws And we, as his followers, our duty is to try and understand his laws, to work them out, to work out how the clock works, and then we will come closer to him. God has made a regular universe based on laws which we should try to understand. That is the Western concept. There is nothing like that in the philosophical systems of China. Confucianism is not concerned with the laws of nature. Confucius was concerned with educational, political questions, not with a god who created anything. Taoism is not concerned with that. Taoism works in a world where there are forces, elementary, powerful, invisible forces like electricity, feng shui, forces of wind and waters. But we as human beings can never really master this or understand it. Our task is to understand enough so that we can manipulate this, but not to understand it at a deep level. So a Taoism is not interested or capable of pursuing science in the Western sense, nor is Confucianism. And Buddhism, the basic message of the Buddha was that of enlightenment, that we live in a world of illusion, that everything around us does not really exist. It is a trick. And our task, it is Maya, which means illusion. And our task through contemplation is to push away this world, to reach enlightenment, and to move to a higher reality. So the Buddhist is not concerned with understanding the laws of nature, because there is no nature. There is nothing here. It is illusion. So your three philosophical systems don't give any basis for the kind of law-based nature, science, which we have in the West. So one of the reasons that, according to Joseph Needham, why China hit this high-level equilibrium trap. If you look at Joseph Needham's picture of in his diagram on scientific development and technological development, it's just more or less what I showed you here. But in China, the level of knowledge went like this. It increased over time. So this is birth of Christ, this is Sun, and so on. Western knowledge was lower. But then around 1600, the time of Galileo, Copernicus, and then from then onwards, if you look at chemistry, physics, mathematics, astronomy, all the sciences, Western scientific knowledge went like that. And so by about 1650, just before the Westerners, or when the Westerners came to China in the 17th century, they found a country which was very advanced technologically but had almost none of the Western sciences. The geometry was not developed, the mathematics, the chemistry, the physics. There was very good astronomy or astrology and some astronomy, but almost nothing else. And so the question is, there are two questions. Why did the West, ask the West do that? And why did China not? No one has finally solved this, and it may be a problem that is not solved. But the way I'm going to talk about Europe and so on will help, I hope, a little bit to explain what happened here. So, finally, the virtues of China and what it could teach the West. China, for me, is very helpful because it is an ancient, peaceful, mostly peaceful civilization with a magnificent art, culture, technology and wealth. It has a great respect for knowledge and is highly literate. It lacks the aggressive military traditions of the West and also our fundamentalist religions. The wars that are now being fought in Iraq and Iran and Afghanistan and all around that are something which you must look on from China as completely mad. We are tearing ourselves to pieces. Again, mostly in Chinese history, people have had to live carefully in a balance with nature. Otherwise, you cannot go on with your agriculture. So you've had an ecological balance. Obviously, this has been highly disturbed by your vast economic growth in the last two generations. But you do tend to live in harmony with nature. So you have much to teach to the world. And this is fortunate, for I would expect that over the next 30 or 40 years, unless something awful happens, the world will become more and more influenced by China, as it is already. And so we will learn, I hope, to respect your great ancient civilization. And in the reverse of what has happened up to now, over the last two generations, you have been absorbing many Western things into China. We now have to absorb many Chinese things into our civilization. Because if we don't, if we go on behaving in the way in my civilization that we have been behaving, we will kill everyone on this planet. There will be wars and destruction. But if we can become Chinese, then we can go on for another 5,000 years. Thank you very much. Thank you.